each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coys, and that means it's Wednesday. Thank you very much, fans. Thank you, fans, for coming in. And Nick, you're going to have to be busy here because I'm going to do some brain wrinkling and some historical visiting and all the rest.
Wow.
For all... No.
You just wrinkled my brain, man. Yeah.
Not yet.
Hello, I didn't there, wrinkle. Peabody here. Oh. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Well, that's going to be a little more recent than I'm normally used to sharing with you. You know, I like to go back hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. But we're just going to go back decades today because I have a wonderful man with me today. I've known this guy for ever since I've been a little baby priest, actually. And we're going to go back to the 1940s. Now, if you know what that is, if you didn't go to college or if you went to a good school, you realize that was World War II. The man who's with me is a good friend of mine and old compatriot, Mr. Jim Coughlin. Jim, say hello and say hello to our vast radio audience.
Hello, it's great to be here, Father Tom. Yeah, you're right. We go back to, I think, 1986.
Yeah,
when I first met.
That's about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a baby priest I was. And man, if I knew then what I know now, I'd be number one. I would have more success in my priesthood, you know, and maybe the people would be all the wiser and better off. But be that as it may, we live the lives as we do, and we got to take each day at a time and each year at a time, and it's not too healthy to always look back. At retreats, there are good times. There's a time for looking back and a time for forgetting. As a matter of fact, that was a theme, Jim, that last week we went back 500 years and I was talking about the Protestant Reformation. And I said, there's a holy remembering and there's a holy forgetting when you think about history. Sometimes you say you never forget. It's very important to remember because it's bad to forget certain things.
Right.
And another way of looking at that, sometimes it's good to forget. And it's a holy thing to forget. Like, for instance, I'll give you a little for instance. Being a priest, you know, I'm very conscious of the fact that people will do confession. And since I go to confession, of course, when priests go to confession, we almost always go face to face, and I have to go to a priest, and they know who I am, and there's this radical humility when you know.
Well, I'm used to going face to face, but I'm not going to do it now, Father.
That's, especially on the nobody's listening to this. Okay. Yeah, wait a minute, right. Thousands are listening to the radio.
Okay, thank you.
But the reason I say that is because I truly believe God blessed me with a bad memory. Sometimes it's a curse because, you know, you meet so many people and I wish I could remember. names and dates and everything better. But there is an advantage of having a bad memory, because when you talk to people, and if they said their confession, and I always like to say, no, you don't remember who it is.
Sure,
but,
sure.
You know, humanly speaking, you can't help it. And then people always, priests like to say, oh, I don't know who it was behind the screen, but sometimes we do know who it was behind the screen. But it's good to forget. And sometimes it's good to forget. Or like in marriages, you know, you forget. Or if there's divorce and remarriage, it's good to forget sometimes. But we're gonna participate in the holy remembrance today.
Great, great.
That's why you're here, Jim. So the other day we were chatting away, and Jim Coughlin was telling me some stories about his dad, and they were fascinating. So I said, Jim, you got to come down. We got to share some of these stories on the radio. They're so interesting. So give us a rundown, a little bit of who your dad was and what we're going to try to cover in this hour.
All right. Well, my dad was a great example to my brothers and I, and grew up in Brighton Park in the south side of Chicago, which is a place where you led a parish
minister
for many
years.
Saw a lot. He was a seminarian in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
He, as soon as he left the seminary, he was with the SVDs for about 7 years.
SVDs, for those who don't know, is a missionary.
Missionary order up at Techne. And I'll talk about that a little bit. But he had some fascinating experiences in World War II. And because the SVDs taught him German, he had some very interesting experiences, especially towards the end of the war. And then came home like the other GIs and started a family and raised us in Brighton Park. And
You know, I went to the SVDs a retreat when I was in grade school.
Okay.
Maybe high school, either seventh or eighth or freshman in year. And because they were missionaries, and a lot of times a young man's vocational thoughts begin with missionary spirits. You do think of going to faraway places and preaching the word of the Lord.
Well, it's funny you say that, because my dad, the pastor of St. Agnes Church at Brighton Park, was at Pershing and Archer, right by the bus barns. When he found out that my dad wanted to go up to Techne, for those of you who don't know, Techne is in the north suburb, Northbrook Glenview area, Waukegan Road. The pastor got my grandfather, who was an Irish immigrant, and got him in the, don't send your boy up there.
Don't.
There was the ethnic rivalries and the, Monsignor Byrne, I believe his name was, he was going back and forth with my grandfather.
Would he be from the old side?
very possible.
Yeah.
But he told my grandfather, send your boy to Quigley, I'll pay for everything.
Yeah.
Which was big deal.
Yeah.
But my grandfather wisely said, well, let's ask the lad what he wants to do. And my dad said, I want to be a missionary. So that's how he got up to the SVDs at Techne, began to study with him.
The little thought, and this may help somebody who is thinking of vocation and priesthood and all, because a vocation starts one way, and then the Holy Spirit pulls you this way and that way. And I remember going to the retreat out in Iowa. They had a nice little high school or a
Epworth.
Training center. Yeah.
Epworth. Yeah,
yeah. Epworth, Iowa. And I remember going there, and almost all the students were learning Chinese. And there are all these Chinese pictures on the wall, and I think for lunch we had Chinese food or whatever. They were trying to get the young guys to enculturate, because they were intended to go on mission to China. And I came back scared. I thought, oh, I don't want to learn Chinese, you know. And it was a dose of reality. I had this dream, oh, I want to be a missionary. And then I forgot that you'd have to learn their language to be a missionary. You know, where are you going to go? I don't know. I just want to be a missionary. Oh, well, if you're going to go someplace, you better learn their language.
Well, it's fascinating. We spent a lot of time up at Techne as kids, because my dad did stay in formation with the SVDs for 7 years. So he had a lot of good friends and solid classmates, especially Father Tom Commons, his best friend. Well, they would come back, I guess, for yeah. hour and hour.
I remember meeting Father Kahn.
Right. And they would come back, and he'd want to go up and see various old classmates. So many summers we spent up at Techne. And even when I was young, it was quite different. The people that know that area now know that the land next to the mission house is the craft corporate space, a bunch of high-end. There's some high-end stores. There's a big landfill. Well, when my dad was a boy there in the 30s, in addition to the Latin and the Greek and the philosophy and, my dad's case, the German, they also had to work the farm. Mm-hmm. So it was almost self-supporting, and they had to learn how to plant something, and there was livestock. And so these young men were really being prepared in a holistic way.
Yeah. Mundelein Seminary had a farm, too, and the early seminarians worked the farm.
That's great. Ways, you know? But anyway, Techne went to flowers because it was such a moneymaker with them. And the SVDs...
What do you mean went to flowers? You mean they were...
They began to grow flowers instead of food crops.
Oh, okay.
Because they could sell them in the Chicago market right away. There was a bigger...
Like Brother Orchid. You remember the movie with Major... There's a great old classic movie called Brother Orchid about a gangster.
By the time I remember one of the brothers that was up there... When I was quite little when I'm visiting him, and my dad took me to meet the brother that kept the bees.
Kept the bees,
And obviously you're going to need a lot of bees if you're pollinating stuff. Yeah. And he would put his finger in the honey, and he'd say, I think this one was in the roses. And he'd take it, and I said, when I was older, I said, I wonder if he was pulling our leg, But I believed him at the time.
And probably experts can tell something.
But they got a very well-rounded education, and one of my dad's classmates, Father Tom Camp, ended up getting a CPA and had the foresight to know that since the vocations were shrinking, someday there was going to be a lot of the brothers and priests in the infirmary and in places where they need— So all of that land around there is on land leases. They did not sell the land. It looks like it's all built up around them, but Techne still gets revenue from it to take care of the old brothers and priests.
Praise the Lord for that. Yeah. Now, the interesting part of that seminary training, which leads to the World War II aspect, is he learned German with the German priests.
Yeah, the SVDs were primarily German and Dutch, and... you see all the evidence of that in the architecture when you go up to the Chapel of the Holy Spirit up there at Techne. It's just beautiful. And my dad said they were very, very, very strict most schools were stricter back then in the 20s and 30s. But he said they were particularly strict. He did remember that. But loved the German people, loved the culture, and used the German to good ends once he got over to Europe. Mm-hmm. So he left in 1941. And guess what happened in 1941?
A little thing called Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, so he became infantryman. And basically, my grandparents didn't see him for, 10, 11 years. He was 7 years with the SVD. Yes, they saw very little of him when he was a seminarian.
Right.
Even though it was close. And then when he went to Europe, that was almost 4 years. They didn't see him then. And... when he actually got to Europe, well, I guess you can count England as Europe before that, but he landed in Utah Beach D-Day plus three, I think he told us, D-Day plus three. And he was trained to be an anti-aircraft gunner, but the Luftwaffe was not really as powerful as it once was. German Air Force. So they handed my father and a lot of other guys that were trained to do anti-aircraft work a gun. And my father became an infantryman. Mm-hmm. He was older than almost all the other people he was with because he was 24, 25.
Yeah.
And the kids are all 18 and 19. These young men are, And so they saw him as an oldster. And one of the other things he told us is that when he was in basic training, he thought it was easy. Because of the hours they kept in the seminary and getting up early and doing that, they looked at him like, what?
We get to sleep till 6. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
The others are coming. I didn't know this so much until there's a documentary type movie on DirecTV these days called Chamberlain. not Chamberlain, the Prime Minister of England.
Neville Chamberlain. Churchill?
Churchill. Okay. What am I thinking? Yeah. There's a, and Churchill was so dead set against the D-Day invasion. He tried to talk Eisenhower out of it. He was so reliving his World War I days, and he knew what storming the beach was like. And he, it was very difficult for Churchill.
Probably Gallipoli. He probably was thinking of Gallipoli.
And that.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
And if you were on those boats, your brain would be wrinkled so much. You're facing such courage, you know, such courage. And that's just sort of a love of country and a hatred of what was going on.
Right.
With the takeover by the Nazis, that you were willing to lay your life on the line. And
yeah. You know, the young men and the women of that generation were. And though my dad's outfit did not see the horrors of D-Day, Omaha-type horrors, the 90th Infantry Division had 90% casualty rate by the time the war was over. So they saw a lot of fighting between June of 44 and May of 45. And have a number of stories that he told us about that. Not too many, though. He didn't talk about the gore or the blood too much.
So D-Day plus 3 would have been easier to get on off the boat and onto the beach.
Exactly.
But the danger was inland.
Right.
And the danger was inland.
Yeah.
Nick wants us to take a little break here. We're going to bring the faith angle into all of this because, you know, I was telling Jim beforehand, when you bring up topics of war, I'm always interested in the topics of war and why the war was fought and everything. But I'm always aware, too, that as soon as I start talking about war stories, I lose half of my audience because half of my audience are women. And women oftentimes don't like to listen to war stories. But it's faith and war. This is the courage and the what did we learn, what didn't we learn, all that. God has to be at work in good times and in bad. Like it says in Ecclesiastes, there's a time of peace and a time of war. It's an interesting part of the scriptures.
Well, my dad had a strong prayer life, and we'll talk about that and how it helped him get through the war.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I'm Father Tom Coyes. I'm sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. This is listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Join us for a special 150th Jubilee celebration of the Feast of St. Stanislaus Kostka, with a solemn Latin Tridentine Mass on Saturday, November 18th at 5 p.m. This will be the first Tridentine Mass at St. Stanislaus Kostka in over 50 years. Come for this historic celebration. A first-class relic of St. Stanislaus Kostka will be available for veneration. A plenary indulgence can be gained. A festive food reception will follow in the school where Father Charles will explain aspects of the Tridentine Mass. Join us Saturday, November 18th at 5 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm excited about this little hour we have here. We're doing a little history back into the 1940s. Jim Coughlin, a longtime friend and a great member of the church, has been involved in lots of evangelization and education. Jim was a public school teacher and public school principal of one of the bigger high schools in the city.
Right.
Now he's retired. You don't look old enough to be retired, because that makes me feel older when you think of that.
Well, we're told we have to retire to something, not just from something.
There you go.
And you know, I did start helping you out with CCD, Father.
CCD, and I know...
With Joyce, the director of the program.
That's right. Let's keep that on the top of the order there. Anyways, we're talking about Pat, talking about Jim's father, who went through World War II. Jim, I got to use this segue to as a way. Last week we talked a bit about the Protestant Reformation, and I made a comparison between many typical Protestant historians, or just Protestant theologians, or in general, and how they look at history. There is a sad missing links in their explanation of history. And the way I say that is that it often seems that the Protestant mentality or mystique or worldview begins in the 1500s. And the things that happened before that are lost or not put into the equation. And I compare it to young people who think that the world began when they were born. Teenagers who don't necessarily think of their parents as having a history. Mm-hmm. But here you're talking about your father, so you're very much aware that your parents had a history.
Well, you know, I always like to say I won the lottery. God put me in the womb of a great Irish Catholic mother, married to a good, wonderful Catholic father in Brighton Park. Brighton Park is the center of the world. Did you know that?
I was told that.
Yeah. And you're right. I did get to, I was with CPS for, counting substitute days, about 41 years. And I did end my career at Kelly High School. And I was honored that the local school council asked me to be the principal there. But the Brighton Park community that my dad grew up in was very ethnic. Now, you had that parish in Brighton Park. There was five parishes within a half mile of each other.
Within a half mile.
St. Agnes was the Irish parish. And my understanding is that the same canal workers that built St. James at Sag Bridge, where you're at, it was St. Bridget's in Bridgeport. A little further west, St. Agnes was the next one west. And then... They also, it was that group that got the...
Worked on that canal.
Right. Now, less than a block from our Catholic parish was another Catholic parish, St. Joe's and St. Anne's.
Mm-hmm.
And we called it the French Church because a large group of French Canadians had come down before World War One, and that's what our parents called it, the French Church. Yours was, I believe, Immaculate Conception was Lithuanian.
The Lithuanian Church.
And there was two Polish... St. Right. Pancratius and
Five Holy Martyrs.
So a lot of ethnic Catholics, you know, back in the day. And they, by the time we got there, they weren't really, you know, stratified like that. But in my dad's day, they were.
And, of course, ethnicity can be a great divider. It holds people together, of course, if you're in the same ethnic boat. It'll divide people when they're out. But in that world... Of course, it had its negativity, but the competition was a little bit more friendly competition when you had a unifying Catholic ethos or morals that you all right. held to. And now our moral ethos and ethic is deteriorating, and so it doesn't hold us together in the ethnic doesn't hold us together so much. Anyways, that's a topic for another show, get you to come back sometime. So we left your dad off. And so I say, you're an example, an antidote to what I say happens with a lot of young people when young people don't consider the history of their parents. Right. That I had a philosophy teacher, wonderful Dr. Pufer, back at Catholic University, who would say quite frequently, remember, your beginning is not the beginning. Because he wanted us to put that in context of, and it, I remember him saying that, but it didn't hit me as much as now I know exactly what he's talking about.
Sure.
And even when you say the, I could say with the Protestant mentality or a Protestant historian looking at history, the beginning of Protestantism isn't the beginning of Christianity.
Right.
That's a slap in the face in a certain sense if you don't consider that. We had a wonderful evening last Saturday night with our Catholic professionals. Joyce, your wife, was there. Anyways, that's a topic for another topic, another show too. Bring us up to date.
If any of your listeners saw that television series on HBO called The Band of Brothers,
mm-hmm.
It involved an airborne unit. But if you looked at what they went through, except for the actual jumps, it was very similar experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Fought through the peninsula towards Paris. He was with the 90th Infantry Division, which was one of Patton's Third Army groups, in the Ardennes, in Germany, through Czechoslovakia, Bavaria, a trek across Europe. And he didn't talk to us almost never about someone getting hurt or have seeing a terrible thing. Had to.
Yeah.
But he did tell us about a couple things. The German hand grenade was called the potato masher. Because it had a handle and it had a funny cylinder at the end of it. He said that the hand grenade landed right next to him in the foxhole he was in, and he couldn't get out. So he said he said a quick prayer to his guardian angel that it wouldn't go off. And it didn't go off.
Yeah. Oh,
so wow. He told us that. He used to tell us that story. He also used to tell us that.
You have to be a prayerful person to have the mindset to do that under such pressure.
That was my dad.
Instead of letting go of a line of explicit cursing words or whatever,
right.
To go right to prayer.
Right.
It's an important indeed.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. So we all have to practice that. We have to practice prayer on a daily basis so that we're prepared for those once-in-a-lifetime times.
You're really right. And he always gave us a good example of piety and of prayer. He was a regular guy. He was a dad. He had a bad temper sometimes. He had but I always, I caught my father on his knees many times at bed, beside of his bed. Sometimes, not too much in the early in the morning because he got up before all of us, but at night before he would go to bed.
Yeah.
And he talked about how important it was, his face was to him in the war especially. He used to ask us to pray every Christmas Eve. He used to ask us to pray for the guy that got killed next to him in a foxhole on Christmas Eve, 1944. Mm. My father was with elements of Patton's Third Army that relieved Bastogne in the Battle of the Bulge.
Mm-hmm.
In the woods, Christmas Eve, the Germans would use tree bursts. They'd have the shells go off at the tops of the trees, so not only would the guys get hit with the shrapnel, they'd get hit with all the flying pieces of the trees.
Branches.
And he lost a buddy next to him, and I'm sorry, I don't remember his name now, but he used to say we should pray for him on Christmas Eve all the time. He'd always remember him.
To go through that. One of the things I often bring up as a kind of a pet peeve of mine is that when we discuss war, people, and again, women oftentimes don't like to discuss any aspect of war. Not blanket. I know there's some great women that are very interested in these history, but by and large, I think that's a stereotype that holds true for most of the way. When I go to Washington, D.C. for the March for Life, and we have a busload of teenagers, I like to take them to Harper's Ferry because that's where the Civil War kind of started.
John Brown
tried to rush the ammunition dump and got caught and was hung. And so here I'm on a bus with teenagers and majority are girls. Whenever you have teen club stuff, you get mostly girls. There's boys in there, but and I said, on the bus trips, you got all that time, so I think we should watch movies. And so I said, let's watch a Civil War movie.
No way.
I got away with it once.
Okay.
Never again, because they're like, oh, the girls start going onto their phones and reading it.
There's a type of Civil War going on now, Father Tom.
Well, there's a lot of different types. And very many different levels. So, but my pet peeve is that bringing up the topic of war without really meditating on the causes is not healthy. That's, I think, sort of almost a unholy forget or memory.
Right.
There's holy remembering. There's unholy remembering. There's holy forgetting, and there's unholy forgetting. Obviously, we could get into the causes of World War II and what was at stake and how there's not much controversy about World War II in that sense. You can talk about Vietnam and say the cause was this and that, and why were we there, why were we fighting? You could talk about the Civil War and people could say the cause was this and that, controversy about that. But not so much about World War II, because Nazism was so... publicly despised, I guess.
Right, right.
You know?
But some discussion, and justifiably so, about the prosecution of the war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many civilians killed.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are some issues there about... Yeah.
About the prosecution.
Right.
Is it worth...
Was it a good war, so to speak? Mm-hmm. Just war. Sure.
And did the... in that documentary on Churchill, there was obviously, as the generals discussed the planning of D-Day, there was an obvious sense that we're in modern times now. And if you're thinking of even World War I or the Civil War and the wars between Germany and France before, and the Hundred Years' Wars, you can't convince me that the Protestant Reformation wasn't a part of a series of events that domino had a domino effect through the next centuries that produced a lot of war, produced a lot of killing.
You have to be right. And the nationalism really took off after the Reformation, and obviously, patriotism is a good thing. It's a virtue to be a patriot. But this extreme nationalism, it was more racialism with the Nazis, but, you know, we identify it as the German people.
Right.
Yeah.
And to me, Catholicism adds such an antidote, because patriotism bonds people, bonds. I keep going back to the beautiful presentation of salvation history by Dr. Scott Hahn, a great convert to the Catholic faith from Presbyterianism. And he just presents the layers of covenants that you find in the Bible and that are alive and well today. And obviously the bonding of families, the bonding of brothers and sisters, and the extended family, you could call the tribe, that's presented in the Bible. And then the tribes are bonded together by a nation, by a king, in a kingdom or in a nation. But if that's where you stop, if there's no larger circle, or there's not, if you don't have a sense in your mind, in your heart, that there is a bigger bond that's created. Well, and that's where Scott Hahn so beautifully presents the church as the Lord's attempt to bond people who are bonded already in nations, bonded already in tribes, bonded already in families, bonded already as husband and wife. And obviously, and then he roots it, he hangs it all on the bond between the individual and Almighty God, the personal relationship with the Lord. Spreads to a relationship with another human being, and usually in a marriage, the family, the tribe, the nation, the international bonds.
Sure.
And then the universal bond. If anybody's looking for a picture, an image of a description of what Catholicism means within this world, that's the bond between international groups. We call the Pope the Holy Father, and he's supposed to think of the whole world as his parish. In one of the movies about Queen Elizabeth, right after King Henry VIII, she famously says, and she pushes, and so many of the reforming monarchs and all the rest say, "My only concern is England."
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And okay, a king can say that, like President Trump says, "I want to make America first," and
I'm the president of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Yeah,
that's President Trump.
Well, that's
right.
But Queen Elizabeth, being the new head of the Church of England, can't say that as a Christian. To say, "I'm the head of the true Christian church, and I'm only concerned with England," is obviously not Christian. Not the way Jesus Christ wanted his church.
You know, I don't imagine my...
Yeah, let's see. Nick, are we ready? Let's come back here. And you got to tell us the main story that you told me about the concentration camp right when we come back.
Okay.
Well, let's take a quick break. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Kevin Matthews.
It's the Kevin Matthews Show.
Hey, now, baby!
Hey, Kev is back! Kev is back!
Hey, Kevheads, how are ya?
Kevin Matthews is back with Mary Fiorito Monday, November 13th on Winds of Change. In his book, Kev speaks about his chance encounter with a broken statue of Mary found next to a dumpster and all that ensued from that point. Stop by noon Monday, November 13th to Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Join us for a special 150th Jubilee celebration of the Feast of St. Stanislaus Kostka with a solemn Latin Tridentine Mass on Saturday, November 18th, at 5 p.m. This will be the first Tridentine Mass at St. Stanislaus Kostka in over 50 years. Come for this historic celebration. A first-class relic of St. Stanislaus Kostka will be available for veneration. A plenary indulgence can be gained. A festive food reception will follow in the school, where Father Charles will explain aspects of the Tridentine Mass. Join us Saturday, November 18th at 5 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. We're in the pages of history again, and we're trying to appreciate men of valor and faith. And I have with us the a good man I've known for a good many years. We're talking about Tom Coughlin, whose son happens to be Jim Coughlin. Jim, I like to share stories of history when there's a good lesson for us. One of my pet peeves is going to Civil War battlefields, and the only thing people are interested in is the caliber of the munitions that was used. And why did this general send his troops up this mountain and they were hiding over here? You know, the strategy. I think the lessons... It's better to forget war if that's all you're interested in. If you can learn something about human nature, learn something about what's right and wrong. I don't like looking at a war and not being able to see who is the good guy and who is the bad guy. Now, I know it's a mixture, and everybody doesn't think about all these things, but if huge men, huge blocks of men led by leaders, either civil, presidential, or military, are at the point of killing one another, shouldn't we ask why? So,
yes.
That's my peeve about bringing up war. So, but back to the mundane, not the mundane, the details. Jim, your dad was, since he spoke German, and when at the end of the war, when they were liberating some concentration camps,
story surrounding that. I should say that after the Battle of the Bulge, which he participated in, he said that his unit lost most of their men in January and February when they were taking the towns back that the Germans had taken in the Bulge. So Bastogne got all the headlines, but the roughest times, he said, for his unit was in January and February. Okay. Another, on the way to the Flossenbürg concentration camp, they were in a town, and his unit had pulled back, and my dad and three of his companions did not know that his unit had pulled back. All of a sudden, the four of them were alone in the town, and they began to hear the sound of the German armor in German voices.
Right.
So they hid in a cellar, and 3 days, two nights, with just the water they had in their canteens. My father said he prayed the rosary nonstop. Mm-hmm. And then the third day, he heard American voices, and they could hear the American vehicles, so his unit or some unit had come back. So my father knew that the typical jumpy GI might just shoot at a window that opened, or, these guys are scared. They have a hair trigger. So he unrolled his first aid bandage, put it on a stick, and waved the first aid bandage, which was white, out the window. Yeah. About 10 years after my father died, I was surfing the internet, and just 90th Division, just looking for pictures. I used to, maybe I could see my dad. Well, here's a picture with a caption under it. These four men were left behind for 3 days, and it doesn't have my dad's name, but here's three guys, and here is my father. It's obviously my father, and he's holding the first aid bandage.
So someone said
the story he told us, and I, called my brothers right away. So you're not going to believe it. I just found, there's dad in a number of other stories, but to get to the Flossenbürg concentration camp, because of the training that he had in German,
obviously with the SVDs,
up at Techni, he was fluent, obviously, probably not as fluent a speaker as a listener, but fluent in, when they got to the Flossenbürg concentration camp, which was on the German-Czechoslovakian border, the Germans knew they were coming, and they began killing the prisoners that were still there.
Oh, dear.
In the days before my father's outfit got there, because the Germans knew the GIs were coming.
Yeah.
A week before my dad got there, they killed Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Oh, my goodness.
In the Flossenbürg concentration camp. But when they arrived at the camp, as you might imagine,
Bonhoeffer could have survived if your dad got there a week
sooner,
earlier.
Yeah, the upper echelon of the camp got rid of all their insignia. The officers did not want to be seen as officers. They knew that they were in
the war was. Running down for them.
So when they came to the camp, one of my dad's commanding officer says, I want you to put the Wehrmacht uniform on, put the German uniform on. And they had him in, I get the equivalent of a very large fenced-in cage area.
Right.
And they asked him to stay in there for a few hours and not talk. And obviously my father didn't talk much. But he was listening to all the conversations he could listen to. And the MPs who were standing right outside could see it. They knew it was who he was and that they weren't going to let him get molested. Well, no one caught on to the fact that he was an American. And after several hours, he got out of the confinement and went to the officers and basically pointed out the German officers who had hidden their insignia, because he could see who was coming up to them and asking them questions, and he understood the German very well.
Yeah.
So
isn't that, it's amazing the situations we're put in and where you're do good. The thought comes to me, you know, we're obviously you're so interested. It's your own father, but I want to encourage all our listeners. You know, we all have relatives, and we all have a history, and our parents, and grandparents, and great grandparents. That whole interest in going into your roots, right. It enriches your life. It does. You do feel. You learn the lesson that my philosophy teacher was trying to teach us. Your beginning is not the beginning.
You do. And when you get older, you can start to see, because you have become a young man or a middle-aged man, or then you look back at your father and you say, what remarkable. Look what he was doing at that age. Look what he was you look back with admiration. Now, my dad finished the war in Czechoslovakia, but before they left the Flossenbürg area, because of his German skills, he said he was the de facto mayor of the little town outside it. And he did talk to the Catholic priest there, you know, like almost a confrontation. How could you let this go on right next to you? The priest said, what could we do? They would kill us too. What a moral dilemma for them. He also spoke about terrible reprisals in which people were being killed sometimes in front of the GIs because they had been collaborators.
Yeah.
And mentioned that they really wanted to get this guy that ran the power plant. But my father said, no, he's the only one that knows how to run the power plant. I know he may be, just interesting moral dilemmas and moral in.
He had to spare that guy for them.
At least till later. And then in Czechoslovakia, when the war ended, he said they waited for several weeks for the Russians to come to them. He said they could have kept rolling as long as they wanted to and taken as much territory as they wanted to.
The Russians could have taken?
No, the GIs could have probably, could have taken a lot of Czechoslovakia. Yeah. And because the Germans had just about all collapsed, and had surrendered. But they waited for the Russian soldiers to come to them. He said they were extremely tough. They were peasants. They would ask the GIs for their toothpaste. And they'd take the toothpaste and they'd spread it on their bread and they'd eat it like it was a...
Is that right?
Just all these indications that these are really, people who have not had a lot of exposure to what we call civilization. They did ask him to stay at the end of the war because they said they'd give him a promotion. He was a staff sergeant at that point. We'll make you an officer. And he said, no, I want to go home. I've been waiting for my home. And so he did, came back to Brighton Park, met my wonderful mother. And there's a after the war. And there's a wonderful story of prayer around that. His next door neighbor became a nun with the SVDs. Her name is Mary Clarkin. But she became Sister Marie Celine, the Sisters of the Holy Spirit. They had a big piece of land next to Techne. When she joined that order, there were so many girls that wanted to be called Teresa, St. Teresa, St. Teresa. No, there's too many of you. They said, okay. And she said, okay, Celine was her favorite sister, so I'll call me Celine. But anyway, my dad went to Techne to visit her, and he told her, I don't think I'm ever going to get married. This was 1947. I can't find it. I don't think I'm meant to be married. And Sister Marie told us much later, she made her intention when she made the visit to the Blessed Sacrament every day was that my father would find a girl.
Find somebody.
And about a year later, my father appears to, paying a little visit. And Sister Marie Celine said, she looked at my mom. She said, there she is. There she is. Another, a great story about a Catholic time and about, the power of prayer. And,
absolutely. Yeah. Exactly. And we deal with those things today. And people are you're not coming, not maybe coming back from a war and saving the world from the Nazism. But there are challenges today galore. And, I said a little bit before, I don't know if it was before the break or just since the break, but the pet peeve I have is when analyzing a war and forgetting to decipher who the good and the bad are. That could come across in a bad way if I say it that way, because some people might say, there's no winner in a war, obviously. It's easy to say there's no winner in a war, which is that a preamble to say there's no good guy and bad guy?
You make the point, because my father used to say he admired the German soldier.
Sure.
They were trying to kill him for months.
Yeah.
His buddies. But he said he admired them, and he always said he would like to have gone back to Germany in better times.
Yeah.
Now, he finished the war in Bavaria, and the chaplain in the unit asked if a group of the guys wanted to visit a well-known German mystic back then. Her name was Theresa Neumann.
Neumann.
And the church has not pronounced her venerable or beatified her, but many people spoke of her holiness. She was a stigmatic.
In what?
Bavaria.
In Bavaria.
So.
Where Pope Benedict hails from.
Exactly. So went to visit her, 10, 12 guys with the chaplain. And because my dad spoke German, they said, would you go in? So he went up to the little cottage. She was in front of the cottage and she was gardening. And he began to speak to her, and she stood up and she looked right past him. Now, here's 12 GIs standing there. She went right past my father and went up to the chaplain, who had no insignia on, and kissed his hands.
Mm.
So that,
They knew he was the chaplain.
Right. So he related that anecdote to us.
Yeah.
And, just like any other or most other guys that have gotten a little older, you wish you would have sat your father down and asked him a lot more questions.
Exactly.
And, found out some other things. But like the other GIs, Father Tom, he did come home, married my mom. I have four brothers, so there was five Coughlin boys that grew up in Brighton Park. Three of my brothers became Chicago policemen.
Mm-hmm.
My brother Mike worked for AT&T for most of his life, retired not long ago. I finished with the public schools. But the end of my dad's story is really quite beautiful. When he retired, my mother was already dead, and I was dating Joyce, who my wife, when my mom was in her last illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I, Joyce is a beautiful woman inside and out. You know her.
Yeah.
When I saw her helping my mother and taking care of my mother, I really fell in love with her.
Yeah.
She
had that heart.
She was hot, as they say. She was beautiful. But then you saw.
Right.
And my dad, upon my mother's death, began to walk to St. Joe's and St. Anne's every day, go to Mass, and do a holy hour. He became much more contemplative.
Mm.
I'm convinced he saved my brothers and I a lot of grief through his prayers,
know.
But when he had a pretty debilitating stroke, and several months later died. But in the interim, for at least a while, my brothers and I could take turns caring for him.
Yeah.
And because none of us had scattered too far. Well, when my father had this debilitating stroke on the Feast of St. Anne.
Oh, yeah.
And he died on the Feast of St. Joseph, May 1st, of St. Joseph the Worker. So that, there's some significance there. All the time he spent, many years he spent in that church as he was older.
And Brighton Park is where they had the novena for...
exactly, the St. Anne Novena. He told that's another story. We're not going to have enough time for that. But Father Pierre Barr told me during the funeral that, when I wanted something, I used to ask your father to pray for it, Jim. This is just a great example of, and he used to joke, he says, I'm not leaving you guys anything.
Your dad would say that.
Yeah, he said, I'm not leaving you guys anything. I'm going to leave you your faith. That's your inheritance.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he didn't leave
when
us.
When he died.
But I heard a number of stories at the funeral or at the wake of people who he was giving money to on his little pension in the last years of his life. A couple single mothers he knew, he triumphed all the way to the end and gave us a great example all the way to the end.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, Jim, that one of our faithful listeners is my mother. And I don't know if I want her hearing this segment of the show because, actually, I think my mother should, whatever she can give to her children. She doesn't have to give it to me because I'm so well taken care of as a priest. You know, my brothers and other brothers and sisters need it so much more than I do. But that's the spirit of what's the true treasure? You know, what's right. your true treasure? And I'll give you the, like, who was the saint that was brought before the emperor? And the emperor said, bring us the treasure of your church. And then he brought him all the poor.
St. Lawrence, Deacon. St. Deacon Lawrence.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's so many. It is, enrich your lives, my friends, by doing some history. And try to understand the whys and the, not just to be fascinated with the guns and the strategies. I think that's kind of why women tend not to like war movies. Because there is a lessonless approach to them. It can be, you're not here to learn a lesson. You're not here to understand something about the reason why people fight each other and why they kill each other. But it's just interesting to see, look how big that gun is. how powerful that weapon is.
And part of it is this, the whole theme of heroism.
Yeah.
And I think women understand, you know, there is another kind of heroism.
Yeah.
The one that they exhibit all the time, taking care of the little ones and the sick and the infirm and the perseverance and the...
Good point. That is a great point.
A
general who stops an attack and saves the city from a vicious enemy is a hero.
Right.
It's a hero. But are mothers considered heroes? Is taking care of the home considered heroic? Most don't put it in that category.
No,
and
they don't.
Men should understand that, and some do, of course, obviously.
Right.
There's a movie that was out called The Flag of Our Fathers. I don't know if you saw that one too, and it was a story about Iwo Jima.
Yes.
And the terrible slaughter that happened on that beach and all the rest.
Right.
But the end disturbed me in the movie. Because the end was the son of the veteran who fought at Iwo Jima. And part of the story was that the picture that is so famous of the Marines putting up the flag.
Mount Suribachi. Yeah.
Or the famous statue in Washington, D.C.
Right,
carved after. Part of the movie was about the fact that the American brass needed some good motivation. We need to keep the people behind us in this war. And so that picture was staged, or it wasn't the same thing.
Okay.
But at the end, that's not the reason the picture, the movie disturbed me at the end is because here's the son. The father is now in the hospital dying. And it goes into this narrative, this monologue about looking at the dad, he realized they weren't fighting for anything. They were just fighting for their friends or their brother, their comrades in arm. And so, and then he goes on to say, the narrative goes on, there are no heroes. There's just us. And I'm thinking, that's not the right way to come up with a conclusion. Your dad was a hero, I'm going to say.
And we all can be.
We can be. And look at your life, my friends. See what heroic things you can do. Well, thank you for listening. I'm Father Tom Coyce. This has been a wonderful hour with Jim Coughlin. Thank you for listening. This is AM 750 WNDZ, The Winds of Change.
Thanks, Father Tom.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is wrought. It's time to be stirred. the time is now. The